Okay, and we are now recording. I'll just say this is Daniel Andre Gervais. The date is March 13th, 2013, interviewing Mr. David Fleming. Could you please state your full name?
My name is David Bruce Fleming.
And what is the date of your birth?
May 13th, 1945.
And where is the place of your birth?
Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Okay. Could you tell me a little bit about your background, where you grew up, if you moved around a lot, that sort of thing?
I grew up in Halifax. I lived in the North End for the first 8 years, and then we moved to public housing off Bears Road in 1953, and lived there for a while, and I lived in another house on Bears Road. And during that time, I went to St. Agnes School, and then when I was in grade 8, St. Mary's High School were offering scholarships to boys, obviously then, who did well in junior high. And I got a scholarship to St. Mary's High School, which was sort of interesting because my father had gone to St. Mary's High School, my uncles, one of my cousins, and so.
And
a
lineage.
So yeah, but, you know, having to pay to go there was a bit tough. But I think the first year, I was trying to remember how much the scholarship, I think it was worth $150, and that was like the first year's tuition. And I think by the time I finished grade 11, it might have gone up to 200 or something a year.
Wow, And so that was grades 8 to 11?
I went 9 to
11. 9 to 11, sorry, yeah, okay.
That's all I had here at that time.
Okay.
By 1959, when I started, they only had one grade 9 class, one grade 10 class, one grade 11 class, because they were starting to phase the high school out. And I graduated on June 12, 1962, from grade 11, my junior matriculation, province of Nova Scotia. And the following year, 63, was the last class. The year after I came in, they had a grade 9 class, and then my second year, there was they had a grade 9 class. So we had 9, 10, 11 when I was in grade 10,
right.
And 9, and then when, by the time I got to grade 11, there was only a grade 11 class. We graduated, and then the
next
last
year, the
class
grade
graduated.
9. And how many students were in the classes at that
time? A fairly large size. We probably had 30, 35 students that were, you know, fairly large classes. But they didn't, but we had, you know, good teachers and everything. So
What was the dynamic like being in a high school as part of a university campus or on a sort of next to a university campus? Was there a lot of interaction with the university's undergrad students or the seniors for the high school?
There was within the high school. You know, we were obviously aware of the university being there. And we used to attend a lot of the university sporting events and things like that.
Okay.
we tended to do things separately. We were on the second floor of the, I don't know what it's called, the main building now, you know, up on Roby Street, which had just been built in the 50s. And we had the south wing, I think, on the third floor or something. The cloister was there for the Jesuits. They all lived in the dorm at the end.
Okay.
And I think it was the second or third floor, we had our classrooms were there, and they were all together. But we used the gym, and of course, university students were using the gym and all, and we got to know some of the university students. So it was a sort of an exciting place that way. It was nice in the sense that you know, it was an all boys school, so that obviously had a different dynamic than, you know, if I'd have gone to St. Pat's. But the Jesuits were excellent teachers, and we had some really, really good ones, and I sort of look back on my days at St. Mary's, and a lot of the things I'm proud of myself, I guess, I felt that were characteristics and traits that were instilled in me in the Jesuit high school. It's ironic, my wife went to Loyola College, she graduated, and she was still at Loyola before it amalgamated.
Oh. Okay.
And it became Concordia. And, you know, we take the same approach to things sometimes, and I think it has to do with that, you know, that whole Ajay Quadatis thing that the Jesuits had. And it was, yeah, it was a overall a very pleasant time here, and learned a lot. And a lot of the things I learned, you know, I didn't really put to direct use academically, but it was always nice to have taken Latin and to know Latin. Greek was nice too. And I didn't make use of it. And even sciences and math, you know, I went into to history.
Okay.
It was nice having that sort of really general education that I don't think you get now, and certainly don't get it in high school, and you don't get it in university, I think, quite as much.
That could be.
We wrote, Chris and I were talking, Chris Donahue and I were talking about this on the weekend, you know. I remember my sons, I have three sons, and they used to complain about having to write 5 exams when they were in high school. We wrote 13 exams every term, you know. And we'd, you know, be 2 a day, and we'd do 1 on Saturday morning. And, you know, so we were, and then the following Monday. And, you know, it was tough, and a lot of kids didn't make it. Some of them were held back a year and everything like that. But it really, I think, brought out the best in you. Plus, there was a very much an understanding that you would participate in extracurricular stuff, especially sports.
Okay.
You know, we would go to school till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I think, and then after that, we went on the football field or basketball. And
this was during hockey. The time at the high school.
In the high school, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And it was very understood that that was part of our education.
Right.
And you know, I never excelled in anything. I think bowling was my, I was on the school bowling team, but
okay.
But I think my last year in grade 11, I ended up being on the inter-class winning team for football, hockey, and basketball, so I had like 4 trophies.
Oh, excellent,
cool,
excellent.
Yeah.
So they push is not the right word, but challenged the students for academic excellence.
Yeah.
And sort of fitness of the mind, body, and soul, I guess.
They didn't push people to do it. It was just accepted that you were going to do it.
Right.
And, you know, if you came to the high school, then you had to take part in that. Because you know, we would finish classes early, and, you know, we weren't finished school then.
Right.
We still had to participate
intramural
in
it. Stuff.
So even the nerds, you know, I mean, were taking part in sports, and I think some kids might have gotten out of it for some reason. I don't recall that, but you know, and you know, we did as well as we could expect.
Mm.
But again, that was a neat thing. You know, I really like playing football, and I still, you know, if I go to a field where they're playing football on grass, there's the smell of the grass in the autumn.
Yeah.
It just sort of reminds me of that. You know?
Were there many crowds,
lots
of people come out for the games or anything like that?
No, it was just inter-class stuff.
Okay.
I think, you know, football, we had maybe 3 teams, and you know, just play amongst each other. And then at the end of the year, you know, we'd have playoffs, and they would have a sport night, and, you know, trophies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I won an award for radio speaking. And they had a radio speaking contest. So what you did is you wrote a script and you stepped behind a curtain as if you were on the radio. And I won a prize for that. And, you know, we used to take part in provincial special exams. Remember the Canadian Mathematical Congress had an exam, which is for high school kids all across Canada. And, you know, if you did well, you won a scholarship. I think I came 15th in Nova Scotia, and it was a really tough exam. I don't think I finished more than half the questions, but but our school always did really well in that. Plus, in sports, you know, we were basketball teams, especially. We were A and B basketball teams, and the years I was there, I think we won the city championship in both divisions.
Mm.
2 out of the 3 years. They won the provincials a couple of years. And we had a really good coach, Frank Baldwin. He was went on to found basketball in Nova Scotia and work for the government and everything.
Okay.
And he was the coach of the university team as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a neat sort of a neat place to be. Mm. The most of us were day hops, as we called them.
Okay.
There were a few that lived in residence in high school, more so in university.
Okay.
And so there was a lot of Americans here, for example.
Okay.
Because they had gone to
residence.
Yeah, they mostly lived in residence. They had gone to Jesuit high schools in the States.
Okay.
And that was the recruitment range, you know, people.
Okay.
Was,
New England, Boston,
yeah,
that sort
yeah,
of yeah, okay.
All New Englanders. And,
okay.
All very usually a lot of them were very bright. A lot of them were good athletes because that was part of the thing. Father Hennessy, when he came, and Bob Hayes, they would go on recruitment trips down to New England.
Okay.
Hayes would always take Father Hennessy with him to assure the parents that this was a good place for them to send their kids and
right,
stuff like
right.
this. But so there was that. But you know, we got along well.
Yeah.
The Canadians and Americans, there wasn't a lot of rivalry in that sense. There was a bit of a gap between the day hops and the resident students. Because
right.
The resident students, you know, tended to be together more.
More,
than
sure. Yeah.
We all went home at the end of the day. But,
were there many Newfoundlanders as well?
Well, there was one guy from Newfoundland that I remember was there. He went on to become a millionaire.
No way. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
the last
go.
I heard, he had a plane. He owned a fleet of aircraft or
oh,
something.
Oh, really?
In Newfoundland.
Wow.
I can't think of his name right now, but
okay.
Yeah, he was there in high school and university.
And university, okay.
And, but no, most in high school, most of the out-of-town people were Americans, mm-hmm. that in those years, late 50s, early 60s. By the time I finished university in 66,
mm-hmm.
A lot of out-of-town people were coming from Ontario. They were starting to recruit people from that way.
Okay.
But there was still always a... And to some extent, the Americans on campus, you know, had far more influence than their numbers, you know. Remember, I guess it was my last year here, there were maybe 600 students, and there was less than 100 Americans, but the Americans were always involved.
Oh,
students,
sure, yeah, yeah.
I was in the student council and
okay,
stuff
yeah.
like that.
Go-getter attitude.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, during those years, early 60s, of course,
yeah.
it was the whole Vietnam War thing.
Right.
And that was sort of interesting because there were a lot of sort of anti-war protests being held here.
Okay.
And, of course, that was a bit of friction sometime between the American students and the
right. Okay.
And the non-American students over that because some of us were involved in anti-war demonstrations.
Right.
And things. And so that was a bit of a...
But the repercussions of... the world realpolitik were definitely felt.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, we were certainly aware of that.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the day that John Kennedy was assassinated. I was in a political science class.
Wow.
And somebody called the professor and told him, and he came back in. I can't think of his name now. He was here for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he came in with tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
President of the United States been assassinated.
Even Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, that's right.
Was
yeah,
emotional
same,
in
yeah.
the broadcast.
And
yeah.
So we, you know, they canceled classes. And
really? Wow.
And I remember a bunch of us were down in the gym, you know, just sort of sitting around and saying, "Ooh, this is freaky," you know.
Yeah.
Boy,
yeah.
You know, we'd never thought of anything like this. And some guys were just, you know, shooting hoops. I mean, there's nothing else to do.
Right.
Class was
right. Yeah.
And I remember one of the Americans came. Down from, he was in the chapel, which
mm-hmm.
was just upstairs,
mm-hmm.
really upset. You know, we were playing basketball, you know.
Oh, sure.
Don't you know a great man has just died?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Well, yeah, but, you know, everybody handles it the way.
Sure.
You go to church,
and life
you
goes
hoops,
on.
You know,
yeah.
Life goes on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was that. The high school itself, though, was, like I said, it was. Teachers had, you know, they had high standards,
mm-hmm.
and if you didn't meet the standards, you were gone, you know, and there was nothing like, you know, I knew students who, you know, I was in grade 10 with, and I went to grade 11, and I stayed in grade 10 the second year, you know, and that was, you know, that happened sometimes.
There was nobody being passed along
no,
then.
No. You either did it or you're not,
or if you didn't
do it, then you were out and you went to...
So they instilled discipline, but maybe more so determination.
Well, there, you know, one of the things that I've always grown up with is a sense of responsibility.
Right.
And I think people nowadays know all about rights, but they don't know very much about responsibilities. And I think that one of the things that we learned first was that, you know, people have responsibilities. We have rights as well, but you got to earn the rights. And you earn your rights by taking on your responsibilities.
Sure. Contributing.
I mean, that sounds old-fashioned.
Well.
But you know, it was something, and, you know, I get annoyed sometimes about hearing sort of everybody saying, well, their charter rights are being stomped on by some stupid thing, you know.
Yeah.
And
parking violation.
Yeah,
here,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're discriminating against me.
Yeah.
Parking, yeah.
Yeah.
And so you know, but of that age and that generation, that's
yeah.
I think. But I think those kind of attitudes were sort of instilled in us because of the type of education we got.
Citizen Santa Marians.
Yeah.
Conscious
yeah.
of
yeah.
their rights and responsibilities.
Conscious, yeah, and conscious of the community.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Having a passion for academics, sport, but then also the world around you.
Yeah.
Like having a
yeah.
consciousness.
Yeah.
Reading the paper, something a lot of
well,
people
no,
know.
That's
yeah.
right. I mean, you know, we used to do a lot on sort of current affairs and everything. Mm. We were expected to know what was going on in the world, and you know, it was I don't know what it would have been like if I had gone somewhere else. But I certainly look upon my years in high school here and in university as being positive ones and ones that helped me subsequently in life.
Culturally, how diverse was the high school when you were attending? Like, were there many African Nova Scotian students or students from Trinidad?
No African Nova Scotian students. Guy from Trinidad, but that was not in high school.
Okay.
No, we were all white.
Okay, yeah.
White guys.
White guy school, yeah.
Yeah. They didn't start having blacks here until, I think, my second or third year in university.
In university, okay.
And that was mainly because the coach who took over from, my names are going here, took over from Frank Baldwin,
okay.
second basketball coach. He was recruited from New Jersey, I think.
Oh, okay.
So they brought him here. And he brought, I think, four of the five starting players from the high school team that he had coached.
Oh, okay, okay.
And these were just tall black guys.
Giant, yeah, yeah.
And I always remember one time, so this would have been probably 64, something like that, maybe.
Yeah.
And I always remember... it was when they were having riots in the 60s, in the mid-60s,
right,
like
yeah.
in Watts and places
sure.
like that.
Civil rights movement.
Civil rights movement. And they had a couple of these players from New Jersey mm-hmm. on television, on CJCH.
Oh, okay, okay.
And Father Hennessy went along with them to talk about, you guys are here now, and you know, what's happening
right.
back home. And,
yeah.
You know, and then they sort of talked generally about discrimination and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, you know, what would you guys be doing if you were back there now and not here in St. Mary's? Oh, we'd be burning and looting with our buddies, you know.
Really? Wow.
Father Hennessy almost
yeah.
fell off the chair.
I bet he did, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, this would have been, I suppose you remember, too, the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah,
and
right.
Bobby Kennedy after that.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
yeah,
lots of heat coming from...
That all took place after I left. That was 68.
Right,
I graduated in 66. But,
okay.
But this was, like, the early 60s. But anyway, I remember that. So then, you know, once we started, you know, importing basketball players from football team, they were bringing in a lot of football players from the States then Ontario.
Thinking about championships.
Yeah,
thinking
I remember 73. I was living in Ontario then, and St. Mary's won the basketball championship, the national title.
Mm-hmm.
We went in like double overtime against U of T for the hockey and lost.
Okay.
Bob Boucher was coaching then. And then in the fall, we won the Vanier Cup.
Oh, right,
so
okay.
Like
yeah.
Almost three of the three big sports
right,
from a
right.
university, which by 73 was probably not more than 2,000 people, maybe three.
Wow, yeah.
But, you know, sport is a big thing. But again, sport is big and was big in a lot of Catholic high schools and universities in the States. So that was that sort of American influence.
Right, right, yeah, the sports
and the whole Notre Dame thing.
Right, yeah, okay, okay. What were your first impressions of the university? When, like, did you immediately after high school just sort of go down the hall and now you're in the university?
Oh, yeah. How did it work? Yeah, it didn't, you know, I wanted to do history.
Okay.
I did an honors history degree.
Okay.
So, you know, it just seemed like the thing to do. I never thought, oh, maybe I should apply somewhere else.
Right.
One of the advantages of coming here to high school here was that you did... We got a what's called a junior matriculation, which is grade 11.
Okay.
But that was recognized by the university as the equivalent of grade 12.
Okay. Okay.
So it meant that, you know, we got some credits. So, you know, you did. I still did my university in 4 years after grade 11. Most other people would do 4 years after grade 12.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay.
So
ahead of the curve.
So you from the
high school.
Yeah. So okay. I saved a year there by not going to
grade
12.
Right.
So when I graduated on my 21st birthday in 1966, May 13th. And so, you know, I was a very young graduate, I guess, there, as were most of the rest of us who had gone to the high school because we didn't go to grade 12. So, yeah, no, it was just sort of an accepted thing. You know, I lived in Halifax. There was no thought about going away to university.
Right.
You know, two of my three sons went away to university, and now they live in foreign countries. And,
oh,
you know,
okay.
So once
yeah.
And you know, I think back, and you know, maybe my life would have been different if I had, you know, gone to Carleton or something.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Moved to Ottawa and went
yeah.
to university. But you know, I was quite content to do that. My father used to run a gas station, so you know, I made money in the summers and on weekends working in the gas station, family business, and I felt a responsibility for that.
Okay.
Plus, it was going to cost more money to move away.
Sure. So. Yeah. So many things to consider.
Yeah. But no, it was just, I guess, the thing to do. And I did, as I say, you know, in university, I concentrated on history and got an honors degree.
Okay.
And then I went to Dal for a couple of years and did postgraduate work.
Okay.
Never did finish my MA. I got a job and moved along.
But
a lot of the research that I had done, you know, I did research on various politicians and bishops in Nova Scotia, and it got lots of things published.
How did you find your department while you were taking history here?
Here?
Yeah.
Oh, it was very good. Jack McCormick was the head of the department at
the
time.
McCormick.
And Stan Bucherlingo was there. Stan had come over from Poland, I think, in the 40s, I think. It was a really interesting thing that happened here in the, I guess, after the war, and then, well, in the 50s, I guess, when it was sort of 56, there was upsets in Europe. There were a lot of professors who came to Canada, and they came to St. Mary's, and they were all Eastern European, and they all had thick Canadian accents,
European accents.
And some of them was so hard to understand.
Yeah.
You know, but they were all very brilliant people.
Yeah, definitely.
And Elizabeth Chard, I think, I was here when she started teaching history, and I think I took her Nova Scotia seminar the first time she taught it. That would have been in 63, I guess. And at that time, the history department, there were just three. There was McCormick, Bucherlingo, and Chard, and or Hutton, as she was named.
Okay.
Hutton. And so, and then by the time I graduated, I think a couple of other people had come on, but most of my history courses that I took here were all taken from those three university. And in order to to major at that time, you had to take like 10 history courses.
Oh, really? Wow.
To major.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So I had a wide range.
What were the courses like?
Everything. You had to take European, had to take American, Canadian, you know, foreign affairs. McCormick used to teach one on foreign affairs or nearly 20th century, World War One.
Right, okay.
Diplomacy and stuff like that. So, so there was a lot you had to do, take a lot of courses.
Mm-hmm.
So then I got accepted at Dow and went there and sort of, you know, and ended up sort of becoming interested in marine history.
Okay.
And all my work experience after that, both at Parks Canada, the Maritime Museum, and other museums I worked for all had to do with maritime, being the maritimes and marine history.
Okay, yeah.
And so that was, but I didn't learn a lot of that the marine stuff at university. It was just stuff that I picked up along the way.
Became an interest.
Plus the fact, you know, back in those days, you know, I do lectures at Carleton and at Algonquin in Ottawa from time to time for museum studies program and heritage conservation programs. And, you know, here I am with a BA sort of lecturing on these people who want to, who are taking museum, you know, masters in museum studies. Mm-hmm. Well, I never took a museum course in my life because I never had museum studies courses. You know, you had a degree in whatever. You know, if you were a botanist, you became a natural history curator. If you were a historian, you became a natural history curator. So that was how, but there were, you know, anything I've learned about museology and heritage conservation is all based on sort of my work experience since then. But the education that I got here gave me a very good grounding for that. So I was always very thankful for that. Plus we had, you know, in high school and university, we had very good teachers as well.
How did your image of the university change or not change? Your first impression arriving for the high school and when you graduated the university, obviously there would have been some cultural shift, some gender shift. What sticks out in your mind?
Well, the gender thing was always, I mean, these are young teenage boys.
Right.
You're in the school. And, I mean, you know, we would have to sort of go, well, I don't know about others, but, you know, every time we had a dance in high school, I have to call up this girl I knew from grade 8.
Okay,
yeah. Used to be a neighbor of mine, you know, so,
okay.
You know, you need a girl, I'll call Sandra, you know, dance is coming up, the prom's coming up, or
right,
whatever.
Right.
And so there was that. And then in university, it was, of course, the same way.
Yeah.
And it was only, I think, a couple of years after I left here that that they went co-ed. They went co-ed in 70, I think, or
68.
I graduated in 66.
Yeah.
There were a couple of women going to university here. They were, in university, there were only two. and they were sort of older women who would come back to do specialized courses or education courses and stuff.
Okay.
But they really started out because they were the only two women students at the university.
Did it feel like it would be an inevitability that the campus would become co-ed?
No, we never thought much about it. You know, we knew what we signed on for. You know,
definitely.
It wasn't this, you know, having demonstrations in front of the dean's office saying that it should go co-ed.
Right.
I don't recall that.
Okay. Okay.
It was just, you know, it was just the fact of, you know, this is what the way it was. And,
what were some of the sports that you were involved in while you were here?
Well, like I said, in high school, I played everything. You know,
right.
There was to be played.
Of course.
Played hockey, football, basketball, but you know, like I said, only intramural.
Right.
You know, I never was on any of the school teams or anything like that. And university, on the bowling team.
We won a champion.
I was on the curling team in university for a while.
Okay, curling.
We were going away to a curling tournament in Antigonish one weekend. And,
okay. Did they have lots to offer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There was lots to do. And there even was a sort of a inter-fac basketball thing, too. Mm-hmm. But I never really played much of that when I was in university. I was really not that good. You know. And so, by university, I was just sort of concentrating more on my studies and things like that.
Definitely.
But I was involved in student council.
I
was the CUSO representative, Canadian University Service Overseas.
Okay.
I was a CUSO rep here my final year. And
was it an elected position?
No, it was an appointed position. But it was, you were an ex officio member of student council.
Student council, okay.
And I was involved in with a bunch of fellow students in my last year at university in doing a course evaluation booklet.
Oh, okay.
We did the first complete student course evaluation booklet for any university in the Atlantic provinces. And what we did is we sent out all of these forms, questions to all the students in all the classes. You know, what you thought about the course and what you thought about the professor. Collated them back. Typed up this booklet, made 800 copies, and gave it out.
Wow.
And it became a little bit of a problem. That was because Father Hennessy, I think, was the dean at the time. And he met with us, and he said, you know, are you going to give this to the university to review before you publish it?
Right.
And he said, well, no, we hadn't thought of that. Yeah. And this is why we were doing it.
Yeah.
It was a student thing. It had nothing to do with the university.
Right.
And it wasn't, and it was a very subjective thing. The year before, we had done a course information report, which
okay.
basically just told what each of the courses were,
mm.
more than you found in the calendar, mm. the academic calendar. So we had done but this was going to be, I mean, there were some teachers that, you know, didn't do well at all, and some professors.
Mm. Yeah, I can imagine.
And, you know, and a couple of them, I remember, it was these people who didn't speak English very well.
Right,
and people
right.
are trying to, you just couldn't understand them.
Yeah.
And I think the university was worried that, you know, the feelings would be hurt if they saw all this stuff.
Sure.
Well, that's, you know, this was right in the midst of student rights and
right.
all this
yeah.
stuff,
okay,
and
yeah.
riots on campus, and
right.
you know,
yeah,
so our
right.
thing was basically doing the doing this subjective course evaluation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there was sort of a veiled threat that, you know, this might not go down well for us if we didn't opt. So we said at the time, well, you know, we will give copies to the Board of Governors
mm-hmm.
before we release it to the students.
Mm-hmm.
And Hennessy and the president said, no, you know, we think you should give us a copy before you print it. And, you know, just in case, you know, it's libelous and
yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I said, well, no, actually, the student council has hired a lawyer, and we've had somebody look at it.
Okay.
And, you know, so I said, you know, we're well aware of that. So I remember this one strange meeting we had, and they were telling us that, you know, well, it would be nice to do this, and they kept stressing it. And I remember, I think it was Father Hennessy, and of course Father Hennessy's a god here, so nobody said, and he sort of indicated that, well, you know, perhaps it would be unfortunate if, you know, our years at St. Mary's were tainted by by something that would happen to do with disobedience or something.
Mm-hmm.
Weird way to put it. I mean,
right.
you know, what he was basically saying, and what we interpreted after we left the room, was that, you know, we're probably going to get kicked out if we didn't
yeah,
do this.
Yeah.
So we got very paranoid.
Could be problematic.
We
yeah.
got very paranoid in our office at the time. It was in the basement, behind the gym.
Okay.
And under the stairs in the back there. So we got really, so all of the Gestetner, you know, the originals of the thing, remember, we packed them all up and took them home to one of the guys I was working with on this, lived in the North End, near
okay.
me, and sort of packed all this stuff in his garage because we were worried that
right.
they might come in and take it.
Come to the office even, yeah.
And we ended up that summer, you know, we took a month after we graduated and, you know, churned this thing, you know, using a hand. Frank
wow,
Gestetner,
yeah.
800 copies, 50 pages long or something.
Yeah.
Staple them all together. And, and you know, we gave them out and never heard anything.
Mm.
There was no fuss. And then the next year, I think, they automatically did it. And
right.
we had a nice fancy cover on it.
It became the start
yeah,
of something that
yeah,
was, yeah,
yeah,
sort of
But we had taken it from nothing
yeah.
to this course information booklet to this subjective course evaluation booklet.
Mm. Much
and
more
then,
interesting
yeah, but by the time
information
after that there's no big deal
yeah,
anymore.
Yeah.
But that was sort of an interesting thing. So I spent a lot of time doing that, you know, working on that.
Right.
And so it was you know, I had my extracurricular stuff, you know, it wasn't so much sport as it had been in high school, but more to do with other things.
Mm-hmm. When you graduated from the university, did you feel like you would always have a strong association with St. Mary's, or if it would just even just always have a special connection?
Well,
did you think?
I did, and I didn't, you know. I did. I felt this whole rah-rah stuff was a bit much, you know. I'd sort of gone beyond that, I guess.
Sure.
And I just didn't feel that, you know, I wanted to sort of be out there for all the university stuff. And
didn't have to paint your face.
No, we never did anything like that.
Right.
But And I was only living here. I was only here for 2 years after I graduated. I graduated in 66, and then in 68 I moved to Ottawa and was there for 7 years and then came back. And even when I came back, I didn't hook up with university very much. I did a few lectures here in the 80s, you know, with some of the history professors, you know, on marine history and stuff, and got into it, back into the university that way, through, you know, the Atlantic Canada Institute and stuff like that.
Okay.
With people like Colin Howell, who
I'd known.
Colin and I had gone to school together at Dow, and after St. Mary's, and I really didn't get really closely associated to the university again until 88,
okay,
when we were doing this high school reunion. 1988 was the 25th anniversary of the closing of the high school.
Okay.
High school closed in 63. So, you know, Chris Donahue called me and a few other people and said, look, you know, you're a museum guy.
Yeah.
We need an exhibit for this. That's what museum guys do. Would you like to curate the exhibit?
Oh, okay.
Like to collect the photos and the artifacts.
Yeah.
Memorabilia.
Right.
So I said, I'd like to do that. That would be neat. So we came down and we met up in the big building there on Kirby Street. And a lot of these guys I hadn't seen since university.
Mm.
Some of them I hadn't seen since high school. So that would have been like 25 years, up to 25 years, or 20 years at least. A few people I had seen
intermittently. Yeah, sure.
And within an hour, it was like we had never been apart.
Right,
you know?
It's
just incredible that all sort of came back.
Yeah, the camaraderie.
Yeah, and it's just sort of easygoing, you know. And people hadn't changed, but they had.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and it was really quite neat. And going through that whole high school reunion thing, I guess, brought me closer to the university. Then Larry Utak asked me to be on the Sport Hall of Fame committee.
Okay.
Because the Sport Hall of Fame had been set up a few years before by Susan Mattress. And then Larry was chair, and they wanted somebody to be on the board.
Okay.
And who knew something about museums, like, you know, artifacts and things.
Okay. Is this is that David Fleming there for the...
Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what, 95, yeah.
Yeah, for they did...
Yeah, that's right. That was the first one. Yeah, I was on there from 95 till 2000. That's when I moved back to Ottawa. I moved to Ottawa.
Okay.
So I was on the board from 95 to 2000.
Okay.
And then I chaired the board for the last 2 years, I think. Larry,
okay.
Larry was his illness had sort of come on, the LS.
Oh, okay.
So, that was me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Actually, the person who recruited me was Heather Harris.
Heather Harris, and, okay.
She called Larry and told Larry to call me. And then Elizabeth called me. I'd seen Elizabeth lots of other times.
Okay.
So first thing, I was on the committee, and then I think the last 3 years I chaired the committee.
Okay.
And we did the... Yeah, but... Yeah, I was there from the very beginning of the inductions, because I was involved in all of these. And
did the 1973 Vanier Cup team.
Some
really great...
The Vanier Cup thing, that was really neat, because we had... I remember saying to Larry, I said, you know, explain the Vanier Cup team. I said, what are the chances of getting the Vanier Cup to have for the induction ceremony? So he said, I think we could do that. So he got in touch with somebody. Anyway, so I get a call at the museum. I've got something to show you. So at Larry's office, there's the Vanier Cup sitting on his desk.
Yeah.
And we hadn't told anyone. There was only about three or four of us that knew.
Right.
So when we were doing the induction, I was doing the induction.
Okay.
And I was reading off, and I said, we're inducting the 1973 football team. And I said, we have a special guest for the team. I said, this guest was with the team. This guest was on the minds of each of these players at every game, and was with them when they were on the road. And that great day, and I think it was Toronto when they won the Stanley Cup. Tonight's guest was, this morning's guest was with them right through it all, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember Curly Robinson said, he said, you know, there's a couple of girls who used to
be on the
TV.
Yeah,
figured, oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, was it? Could it be?
Anyway, and I said, please welcome the special guest, the Vanier Cup.
The Vanier Cup.
And he walked in the Vanier Cup. That was so neat.
That is fantastic.
But that was Larry. Larry was able to get that. So,
wow.
Of course, they got all the picture taken with it.
Yeah.
But,
well, now, how does that sort of fit in with the SMU Sport Hall of Fame Heritage Center, with the current project you're working on with the alumni?
Well, Chris did. Well, see what we did. Part of the thing that we did with the high school reunion is
right.
we had to add a plaque, and the plaque is on the front of what do you call it? What's
the
that?
McNally?
The McNally building?
Yeah, McNally, the big gray building.
Yeah, the big gray building. Just used to be the university.
Yes, exactly.
But there's a plaque right to the right of the front door.
Okay.
About the high school. On the last day of the reunion, we unveiled the plaque.
Oh. Okay.
And this business.
It's a bronze.
And what happened was when the sport, varsity athletic book came out last year.
Right.
I guess Chris and some of the other people were saying, well, you know, they didn't have much on the high school there. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be nice to, because, you know, as I mentioned to you, you know, we even have maybe 120 kids mm-hmm. in the high school, and to win a provincial championship, you know, in basketball is pretty good, pretty neat.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he had called me and said, you know, we're thinking about doing this, because he was looking for, because I was the one that had engineered the plaque and ordered it. And of course, I didn't have the information. I couldn't remember who I got the plaque done by. And so what they want to do is, I guess, put the names of some of these high school athletes and mount it somewhere.
Okay.
But they've been in touch with Paul Puma, who's now the chair of the Sport Hall of Fame.
Okay.
So, but I don't know. And the only reason, like I said, I told Chris, well, you know, I'm coming down in 2 weeks, maybe mm-hmm. get together. So we got together at the Midtown on the weekend, and then
he
told me about this stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess I got involved with the university more when I was on the Sport Hall of Fame.
Right.
And then in 2000, I moved to Ottawa.
Right.
So, you know, I stepped down, and then somebody else took over his chair. His name used to be the sports editor at the Chronicle Herald, for the general editor.
Okay.
And then he was on for a couple of years, and then Paul took over, Paul mm-hmm. Puma. And Mike Doherty has been doing a lot of work with them as well.
Okay.
He's a good source for sport on
Huskies. Yeah, okay.
But, you know, that sort of thing. So I got more involved in that. Plus, I was doing, you know, I helped organize a conference at the you know, with Colin on the Halifax Explosion back in the 90s there. And so, I had contacts with things. That, mm-hmm. You know, I did lectures here from time to time for various courses and things.
Okay, great.
And, you know, occasionally I go to a football game or something. But not so much to see the football game, just to run into people that
definitely.
I would know. And
yeah.
I was here last September, and I just happened to be here when the induction ceremony was happening. So, you know, I got to see a lot of old buddies and stay for the football game and stuff like that.
And the new Homburg Center now we have here.
Oh, yeah, all that stuff. I mean, I don't, you know. But I remember when I first, when Patrick Power Library was first built, somebody said, oh, we're having a meeting and it's in the library. Well, I remember when the library was in the Burke Building.
Okay,
and
yeah.
Before that, it was in the McNally Building.
Right.
When I left here, there were only two buildings on campus. There was the McNally Building and the Burke Building. And the Burke Building was built specifically as the library. And then the rink was being built. And I guess my association with it over the last little while has been more to do with sport than anything else.
Yeah.
Just because of my time on the Hall of Fame board and everything.
Right.
Plus, I had done a fair amount of research during that period because I was interested.
In what ways do you notice that the school has changed since you attended? Obviously, the campus has undergone a dramatic change of structure. Mm. But do you still notice things that are still the same as they were? There's a new diversity, but there's still a very communal feeling to the university. You know, it feels like a big family for some people.
Yeah, I haven't had that much of an association to know whether it's still that family thing.
Right.
You know, I sort of come in here and, you know, the students sitting in the comfy chairs and we had old wooden lawn chairs
in
our lounge and picnic tables, you know, to eat our lunch on.
Yeah.
and you know, library was in one room and
right.
stuff like that. So I imagine that they still have that. I mean, I do go sometime to alumni receptions in Ottawa.
Okay.
Senator Moore usually organizes it. And Wilfie and I went to school here together. He was a few years ahead of me.
Okay.
And he always has an e-spot in Parliament. So it's a neat place to have a
yeah.
reception. So
yeah.
I always go along.
Okay.
And again, I see people that I went to school with there who are living in the thing. But and there's a fairly active alumni group in Ottawa, but I never participate in any of that
okay.
stuff. I think the last thing I did in Ontario, well, I went to a couple of, was it 2000, 2001, when we won the Vanier Cup. I went to the
oh, okay.
in Toronto
oh,
and took my
nice.
Sons, my two sons with
oh,
me.
Oh, excellent, okay.
And that was, but, you know, yeah, no, I'm not. And I guess more, you know, my contacts are more with Atlantic Canada Institute, people like Colin now, who's,
okay.
you know, doing his sports stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I had Colin give a lecture, one of the first sport history lectures in Halifax
okay.
at the museum, you know, when you start getting into that.
Really?
And,
wow.
and I remember introducing at the time and saying that, you know, when I grew up, you learned sport history in the barbershop. Because, you know, you go to the barbershop, get your haircut, and all these old guys are standing around talking
Talk,
about hockey.
Yeah.
Oh, who's better, Howard, you know, Richard,
yeah.
and all this business.
Sure.
And it wasn't an academic thing at all.
Right.
You know, it was just... and, of course, now it's quite a big,
yeah.
quite a big
yeah.
thing. And this
From
hockey conference that they
study,
do every
yeah.
couple of years,
yeah,
you know,
that's right.
draws
yeah.
some really good people. So I have a certain academic interest in sports,
right.
Which... you know, has been associated with St. Mary's in the last little while. But I never go to any of the alumni dinners and stuff. And, you know, I don't play in the golf tournament and do that. And
lots
so,
of technological changes, too, over the
well,
years.
Yeah, there certainly has been. And, you know,
yeah.
but that's the same as any university.
Right.
I mean, I don't, you know, I don't come back here and feel, I'm back home.
Right.
You know, I just come back here being at St. Mary's and, it's changed, and it's not a bad feeling, but it's not.
It has a certain time and place to it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yeah.
And we've gone beyond that. And,
right.
you know, I don't say, look at all the days. This,
right,
that,
right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the university is doing quite well.
Okay.
Academically, and
yeah.
you know, compared to a lot of other universities in the country. And,
I was going
to
ask you, what are your impressions today?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it seems to have a good representation. You know, I remember in the 70s, I was living in Ontario the year we almost won, like, all three of the national
right,
champions.
Right.
Of course, I thought, oh, yeah, I went to St. Mary's.
Yeah.
And, like,
got
somehow,
the sweater on and everything. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Jock school, yeah.
yeah.
I didn't play anything, but I don't
remember. Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, that was... and I remember when St. Mary's won the hockey championship 2 years ago.
Right,
and
yeah,
I,
he was.
I got in touch with Patsy Calbury, who still works at the athletic department,
oh, okay.
and I said, you know, tell Trevor to save a lot of that stuff, you know, like for the Sport Hall of Fame,
right,
because
right.
you know programs and things like that. Because of course people chuck those, and then
yeah.
20 years later,
you're
when
like,
you want to induct the team,
yeah.
they're looking for all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I know because
yeah.
I've had to do this.
That's right.
So, oh yeah, I'll get in touch with him. You know, make sure he does it. So
important to hang on to those
well, the,
things, yeah.
to have that,
to
you know,
sort it out,
to,
yeah,
to keep the stuff now. It's
yeah.
better to keep the stuff now and chuck off it
yeah.
than to have to try to find it 20
yeah.
years from now.
Well, it's no good trying to say how proud you are to be where you are now if you can't sort out where you were.
Well,
yeah,
also, it's
mean.
Just a question, you know, you get these team pictures, and I know 20 years from now people are going to be standing there, you know, looking at these pictures, trying to, well, who's this guy? Who's that guy? You know,
yeah.
I don't remember him, or,
yeah.
you know, he only played one season with us and stuff.
Right, okay.
So that was one of the reasons with the high school reunion thing,
yeah.
that I documented the stuff so well, gave it to them, said, you know, keep this till the university has an archives, then give it to them. Then it's up to the archives if they want to collect the originals of these
right,
photos
right.
or artifacts. They'll know where they are.
Right.
But otherwise, they're there. Because, you know, I know enough about, I've been involved in museum work for 45 years. And, you know, people come to a museum, and if you don't document things well, You know, they're going to come back 20 years later to haunt you and say, well, what happened to that,
right,
you know, compass I gave you 20 years ago?
I don't know. Documentation. I mean, I saw in the paper there about the fellow who had, what was it, $1 million worth of stuff. And I mean, you think, how could that be? If everything,
well, you know,
but
you,
it's,
you got a box of documents like that.
Yeah.
Somebody signs it out and goes through it.
And then,
you know, you don't take stock every year to make sure each document is there. I mean, most archives don't have that.
Yeah. Facilities and stuff.
Resources.
Is there anything you want to add? Thoughts now moving forward?
I'd just like to mention something about the teachers.
Okay.
You know, the teachers we had in high school, I think, were exemplary. I think you know, Father Power was the principal at the time. We had Father Walsh, Father Lesage. We had some, you know, non-Jesuits, Mr. Chow, Ms. Harrington, Father Murphy. I mean, you know, these people were characters, a lot of them were. And we gave a lot of them a lot of grief.
Mm.
Well, one of the interesting things about high school is that, you know, we really caused a lot of trouble in high school. You know, we were all very good students.
Yeah.
And I suspect that a lot of the stuff that we did would probably in the 21st century be called harassment, you know.
Oh, sure, yeah.
It wasn't evil stuff.
No, right, no malicious
fooling
intent.
Around,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think most classes could get away with this stuff.
Right.
But you know, there were certain things. And I mean, people used to tease me all the time. I mean, our science teacher, it's Mr. Chow.
Mm.
He was Chinese.
Okay.
So he couldn't pronounce my name, which was Fleming.
Fleming.
Framing.
Framing. Okay.
So my nickname was Big Frame.
I was a skinny little
kid.
Yeah.
That Big Frame.
Big Frame.
And other people had nicknames as well.
Sure.
And there was one big guy, and they called him Flossie. You know, and you know, it wasn't evil intent. It was just fooling around.
Right, exactly.
But you know, the teachers handled us well, and, you know, it was a certain discipline.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you did things, you went to JUG, which was like being kept in after school.
Okay.
And you'd have to do extra stuff like that.
Right.
And of course, university wasn't like that at all, but it was stuff that you would have expected in high school.
Yeah.
And I think it was the kind of thing that I remember most of these teachers fondly, and I remember, you know, the life skills they taught me as much as I remember, probably more so, actually, than I remember the content.
Sure.
Father Russell was our teacher, I think grade 11. He made Latin exciting, you know. We used to, if we did all our Latin Monday through Thursday, and we all did well, then we would refight the Punic Wars. You know, in Europe, in BC years and everything. We'd get our desks and we'd have two armies and like two phalanxes, you know, Hannibal and Hasdrubal, and he would ask us Latin questions, you know, about declensions and stuff like that.
Sure.
And if you got the answer right, then, or you know, you could move up a step, and if you didn't, then you had to take your desk to the back, and the whole strategy of fighting this war, and then of course if one team encircled the other, we won the war.
Wow.
But we used to look forward to doing that because that was our reward.
Right.
But yet we were still learning.
Yeah.
You know? And he was an incredible guy. I ran into him a few years later. He never became a Jesuit priest. He was just training and ended up getting married and ended up being an archaeologist. He was quite a prominent archaeologist in Ontario.
Okay.
And I remember telling him that, and he said, "Oh, that was a crazy thing I did." And I said, "No, but that was neat."
Yeah.
You know? Like they have a teacher that was willing to take the time to do that kind of stuff for
us.
And,
you had to really get creative then, too. I mean, now it's easy enough to say, get in front of a screen, there's a million programs to choose from, go tour, but to take, make it an experience that you can hold on to the information more. So.
Yeah. And they used to do things like, they would offer you incentives, like, you know, you could get extra points for, you know, your term if you did extra projects. So I remember, you know, we had a set of encyclopedias at home. So, you know, I used to go to them and write up these little projects in the library. You get an extra point or something. You probably put way more work into it than you, than you were rewarded for. But again, it did encourage you to do that extra kind of research.
Right, go the extra mile.
So that was neat. And as I say, in university, it was the same way. I mean, overall, the professors were pretty good. Professor Hallett was a wonderful English professor. McCormick, the history guy. And so we were, like I said, overall, it was a good experience. I guess my high school years, I think more fun we have in the sense that it happened at a certain time in my life when I was developing and growing.
Right.
But certainly I have no regrets about going to university.
And you felt that the instructors always had the best interests of the students.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were some of them that, you know, were just putting in time.
Sure.
But very few.
Right.
I mean, there were, you know, like I took logic, you know, philosophy.
Okay, yeah.
And learned a lot, you know, by taking a logic course, you know. And taking philosophy, you know, lots of people go to university and never take philosophy.
Right, yeah.
But again, that tells you that teaches you certain skills that you can use in the rest of your life. You can use problem solving, you can use it in all sorts of things.
Definitely.
So the fact that, you know, we were exposed to all of that, kind of thing, and some of it did stick, and some of it, you know, you can retrieve from the dark recess of your mind, you know, when you need it. And I was always very thankful for that.
That's fantastic. All right, well then, on behalf of the St. Mary's University Patrick Power Archives, library resource there, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to sit down with us.
You're very welcome.
Enjoyed it very much.
All right. 3 o'clock.